Hey there, guys and gals. Welcome to a special edition, a movie review edition of the Asteroid Factory podcast. Today, you guys are stuck with me, Solo Bolo, Three Toes of Fury. Welcome. Today, we're going to be talking about Jay and Silent Bob Reboot. If you're listening to this, you probably already know a little bit about the background of the movie, but it's probably good to clarify that about a year and a half ago, Kevin Smith suffered a heart attack, and since then, one of the comments that he's said regularly in interviews and promotional stuff is that as his life flashed before his eyes, the last movie he made, being Yoga Hosers, really didn't sit well with him, and so he wanted to head back and get some unfinished business done. And over the past several years, he's circled around things like hitting a sequel to Mallrats, doing Clerks 3, which fell through when pretty well-established Jeff Anderson in the Randall role just really wasn't into it from some kind of bad blood stuff that happened in Clerks 2 around money and the Weinsteins and Miramax. So he was out. That kind of put Clerks 3 on the back burner. And they ended up doing Jay and Bob Reboot. Something else that Kevin has said a lot, and I will, as I talk about it on this podcast, I'll probably be saying things that are pretty well established, but that as he approached this movie, he said, you know, we're faced in this environment of tons of reboots and remakes, and so he basically took that approach and rebooted and remade his own Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back, and so that's what we're going to take a look at today. To give you guys some background, I'm a huge Kevin Smith fan. Clerks was pretty much one of like a handful of movie events that I recall that really changed how I view films and filmmakers. It was sort of a revelation. And I think it was that way for a lot of us. Kevin by no means is the first and last note on indie cinema, but when that movie hit and when it hit with so many people like myself, it really kind of opened our eyes to what could be done with movie making. He did it on a shoestring budget. He built it around credit card debt. And really just this basic concept, but hilarious and amazing and really kind of launched his career. And I've been kind of part of the View Askew universe, and that's really the de facto name of how certainly his early movies have connected since then, really big and bad. That being said, I think I still maintain some level of kind of neutrality or non-bias when I review or when I take a look at stuff. And so as I look at his overall portfolio, I think he's got some big hits. I think he's got some big misses, and I think there's some okay flicks. So the only reason I kind of throw that out here ahead of time is just to know, do I have some level of bias? Sure. But am I going to be upfront? Absolutely. So let's take a look and revisit it and see where this new movie lands. First things first, spoilers versus non-spoilers. I personally, when I go into a movie, don't like to have a lot of foreknowledge about it. I try to, if I really know I'm going to watch a movie, I try to avoid trailers or a lot of material around it. So before I even get into the podcast, because I think it's going to, I'm not going to spoil too much, but I think as I kind of dissect what I liked or didn't like about the movie, invariably I'm going to talk about it in more detail than some people probably want. And so before I go in, I'll just give you sort of a high level what I think, and then have you decide if you want to go on from there. But I would actually suggest if you're like me and you really normally don't like spoilers, just cut it off there and make your decision off of that. This movie, all that being said, this movie has, I think there's been, I did catch a little bit of the trailers and the posters and stuff. And so I think a lot of stuff, at least when I watched it, was I was like, oh, I kind of already knew about that kind of aspects of it. So as I go into it, most of what I'm going to be doing is showed up in some level of promotional materials. All right, so here's what I'll say. For those of you who don't want spoilers, and then I'll tell you to stop, is that if you're a fan of Kevin Smith's View Askew Universe movies, and those are like Clerks, Clerks 2, Chasing Amy, Dogma, Jay and Bob Strike Back, then I do really suggest you see this movie. It's not perfect. It's not perfect by a long shot, and I'm going to get into that. But it does have its moments. It certainly has its callbacks, and it does have some payoffs that really do belong in kind of sort of conclude-ish the journey that was started like, what, 25 years ago, maybe more for Clerks. And so the movie is really what Kevin's been saying. It's a reboot of Jay and Bob Strike Back, same structure, same concept, which makes it very meta. So yeah, I think that's the case. If you are not a real Kevin Smith fan, or if you are not a, if you're not really a big Kevin Smith fan of like those kind of early movies that I reference, I don't suggest you see it. I think that to really enjoy this movie, you have to be kind of all in on at least the characters, some of the arcs that were started way back. And as a standalone stoner comedy, which is really kind of what it is, you need to be in that universe to really appreciate it. And so, yeah, I mean, if you even have like kind of a tentative connection with these movies, like, yeah, I've seen Clerks and liked it, or like Clerks 2. If that's the case, then yeah, you'll probably want to catch it at some point, but the urgency around seeing it, it's not as high. So, all right, so that's where I'll end the non-spoilery stuff. And so cut it off here if that's what you need, and go forth and enjoy. Otherwise, let's dig a little deeper and see what I liked and didn't like. The viewing that I saw was the first night of release. So the release strategy for this movie is also, like a lot of things Kevin does, kind of a little bit askew. It was released this week as a recording. So it was an October 15th viewing, which would be Tuesday night. And then there was the Thursday night viewing. And that's really the pre-release strategy. So there's just two showings. They were done through Fathom Events from Sabian Pictures, I want to say. And so at the time that this cast goes up, those will already be passed. But then what's happening is Kevin and Jay are going on a roadshow where they're going to take the movie and do what they do best, which is Q&As. And so what they're going to do is travel, I think, the States, and I think there might be some international dates. I haven't really dug that deep into it. But it's selling really well. I know when it's come through Chicago, they have, what, two nights downtown, and they're both sold out. And then apparently the strategy is that when that movie hits, or when they do the actual Q&A, the movie is going to be released in local theaters. So this is something new to me. I've never heard of anything like it, so we'll see how that flies. But if that is in fact the case, you can kind of go check it out. There's a webpage out there. It's Roadshow Reboot Roadshow. Just Google it. And then you'll get an idea of when it's going to kind of come through your city. And then supposedly that's when you're going to kind of want to watch for it in the theaters if you decide to see it in the theaters. Other than that, this strategy is kind of surprising to me because I really expected this one after maybe these first two premiere dates to kind of go straight to VOD-ish. That seems to be where a lot of the lower budget movies are going. And I have no doubts it will, but there's so far nothing about that yet. So maybe that will all come on the tail end of their couple month tour. So that's another option. For those of you where it's not coming to your city, it's not convenient, or you just like a lot of things these days, I'd rather watch it at home. VOD is probably something it'll hit, I would guess, early 2020. So the premiere night that I saw this at, and I saw this with Radar Rider, shout out, what's up, bud? It was a pretty cool organization. I haven't been to many of these Fathom type events things, and so what was neat about it is you got like a cool mini poster with Jay and Bob, Jay with the cockknocker fist on his hand. And then the theater, the showing actually had like an 8-minute intro by Kevin and Jay. And the material in the intro was pretty much as expected. They riffed a little bit about their past, about what this movie means. The one thing that was somewhat surprising to me was Kevin said that, you know, be forewarned, I know you're here for a bunch of dick jokes, which is really what the movie is. But it's like, there's some emotional stuff in here. And actually, I found that comment a little off-putting because I was like, oh, great, he's going to tack on some emotion. But that was something that actually ended up surprising me. And I'll circle back on that at the end. So then outside of that, there was the movie itself, and then as I've read online since then, this particular Fathom Events type of thing was a bit of a cluster in a lot of places. In the case where I saw it, which was the Chicago suburbs, it was just that intro, and it was the movie, the post-credits, and that was it. Turns out there was supposed to be tacked on like a 40-minute interview with several of the cast and some outtakes. That was not shown where I saw it, and then reading online, it seems that a lot of theaters had different levels of fuck-ups with this, one of which was the posters were either not managed at all or managed poorly. They just kind of gave them away willy-nilly. They're really supposed to kind of just give these away to people who go to that particular viewing. The post-movie outtakes and interviews, a lot of theaters didn't get, or they got, they just chose not to show, which is something I considered, like, you know, maybe they just want to get us out of there sooner. And then some of the theaters just weren't even able to work it because of the power. I don't know if they stream it or what they do. I would assume they'd stream, download, and then show, but regardless, I saw several people on like some of the Reddit talkbacks saying they didn't even get to see it that night. And that's kind of bumming considering there's only like two showings. And where I saw it, it was in a relatively small theater. It was probably like a 80, 90 seat theater that they chose for it. It was pretty full, but still. So So that was the setting, but it's fine. It was a good environment, and you're surrounded by pretty hardcore fans considering it's the first premiere night, and it was something that was kind of pre-sold well in advance. As far as the movie goes, the flow and cameos, I'll just talk high level of set pieces. Really, when you go into a movie like that's a lot of the approach I think that Kevin takes, and it's not a real surprise where he wants to kind of shoehorn in cameos and callbacks to his movie, so, and make it a road trip movie where you're just going from scene to scene. So I've got a couple notes on some of the key set pieces as we went on the adventure. The opening is straight out of the trailer, and that's really starts where I think a movie like this has to start, which is at the quick stop. It's fine. It's a callback. It's not even a callback. It's the same joke from Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back, which was a sort of a portrayal. Or was it? Wait, geez, was that in Clerks 2? Oh, God, it was, wasn't it? I'm getting mixed up. But it was the redoing of the Silence of the Lambs scene. And this was the first shot in almost all the promotions. It's okay. There's also, it's our first cameo with Dante, which is great. By all means, I think for me, there's probably two big scenes in the movie that I liked a lot. And then the biggest thing was just really getting a chance to revisit some of your favorite characters, and Dante being one of them. That being said, outside of Jay and Bob, nobody has like a really strong or big role in here. It's really just get to visit with them for a minute. And that's how this movie kind of opens, is just a quick shot of Dante kind of coming to work. And then that kind of springboards the story forward as Jay and Bob are arrested for growing and selling weed. That leads us into a courtroom scene. Again, there's a lot of this is from the trailers, and I'll say that a lot. And it's just, I guess it's weird to me, but it's also maybe trying to defend. I'm like, don't worry, I'm not going to spoil too much. The courtroom scene was fine. I don't think a lot of the jokes hit, but it was okay. It was a good chance to get things moving again. You have your Craig Robinson cameo, and then you have Justin Long playing sort of a weird dualistic lawyer role. Then that moved us to an airport scene, which was new to me, and I'm not going to go into too much detail on, but this is with a Molly Shannon cameo. And there was a kind of a funny callback joke to those who are really into Kevin and his past and some of the drama that he's been through. So that was fine. It was good enough. Transitions into an Uber scene, and that's where we get a chance to spend some time with Fred Armisen. Again, pretty much all the jokes have been shown in the trailer. It was okay. And then somewhere in there, not my order will be a little bit off, but somewhere in there we got a chance to revisit the Loki character played by Matt Damon from Dogma, which is actually one of my favorite Kevin Smith movies. And that, it's legit just a tacked on scene. It's almost like a narrator scene, for lack of a better word, that doesn't go into the story, doesn't go in the flow. It's a check-in with a character, but it's funny. And the writing on it's pretty great. It's very punny. It's very, very punny. But that's one of the cameos that I really appreciated. And it was just, and it's also, if you, I think in kind of hindsight to where Matt Damon has grown in a career-wise, it's pretty huge to have him show up. So I dug that. And in a way, I was like, oh, man, it would have almost been better if they used him more as a narrator throughout, because it was cool for that point. But that was it. That was the one time he did it. So then we had a movie scene, which is cool, but it really brought up one of the kind of missing factors to me that in hindsight, is that as far as I can tell, and maybe somebody can call me out if I'm wrong, they stop at a movies, not necessarily the movies from Clerks 2, but it was actually movies in the Chicagoland area, and there was no Elias character, and that kind of surprised me. So I'm not sure why or how that worked, and Clerks 2 doesn't resonate as strongly with me as it does others, but the introduction of the Elias character is one that I know a lot of Kevin Smith fans really like, and I kind of feel his loss was noticeable, for lack of a better words. In his place, we got basically like a female counterpart in Kate Micucci, who's hilarious, and she played a very quirky, nerdy character. And then we also had the obligatory Jen Schwalbach, Kevin's wife, cameo. And so that scene progressed pretty quickly. It gave him a chance to kind of bring up one of the running jokes, which it really, this movie, and I can't say it enough how meta and self-referential and layered it is. I'm not saying intelligent, just layered. But Kevin really brings in a lot of his life experience. And one of the big things there was he's gone vegan since his heart attack. His daughter has been vegan for quite some time. And for those of you who have seen his physical transformation, like, it's astounding how thin he is in this movie and just in real life. And I think a big part of that is this transition to a vegan lifestyle. So that joke there's quite a bit in there, and the scene that they kind of play out between him and his real wife Jen, but in the movie she plays an employee of movies. It's not even necessarily Dante's fiance from Clerks 2. I think she's just supposed to be like a manager, employer at the movies. It's pretty funny. It's a cute joke, and it's a cute personal joke almost. So we move on, and we get a chance to get a little bit more on the backstory that really. Of what there is of a plot in this movie, we get a chance to be introduced to Millennium or Millie Falcon. Millennium Falcon, that's cute. Which is Jay's daughter that he didn't know he had with Boo Boo Kitty Fuck. So that again from the trailer that really drives the plot-ish of the story. She's played by Harley Quinn Smith, who's Kevin Smith's real-life daughter, and that was actually another. That was, I think, one of the biggest surprises to me is that Kevin has cast her quite a bit in the past couple of movies. I mean, he built yoga hosiers around her. And that was one of the things I was going into this. I was like, yeah, okay, cast your daughter again. It's totally his right to do. But I'm like, yeah, okay, that's fine. It is what it is. But she really surprised me. I kind of liked her performance, and I liked some of the stuff that they did with her and Jay. As a matter of fact, it was, I think, the standout stuff. But that really comes later in the movie. So I'll work my way there. Some other scenes. Let's see. There was the couple car ride scenes that really kind of help build not only the Millie Falcon character, but then we get a chance to see kind of her core group, and then that transition from like what a car Uber ride to a van ride with a kind of a dumb scene where they set up like a pedophile to steal his van, and then there was like a KKK scene that's very what is it callback-ish to Fletch. I guess that would be one of the movies that have adopted that kind of thing. You can also kind of go with classic Blazing Saddles has done it pretty well. That scene, I didn't get it. It just didn't really work for me. It's fine. It is what it is. But I was just going to say something about that. The van ride, that scene with them. Oh, yeah. So I'll get later. I'll talk about a lot of the references and whatnot. But they really, when you do talk about references of classic comedies outside of this universe, one of the running jokes in here is just straight up built around kids of the 80s who really like those 80s comedies. Ralph Garman, who we know from Garmistrong from the Hollywood Babylon podcast, has his prerequisite cameo in the Kevin Smith movie, and he plays the character of Ted Underhill, and his credit card number comes into play, and his name comes into play a lot. So, for those of you who understand that reference, huzzah, you'll dig it, and it's straight up Fletch. For those of you who don't, check out Fletch before you go see the movie. It's a classic comedy that you should know. And then the movie kind of wraps things up and really has most of the third act, I want to say, take place in a convention, a Comic-Con. And I think that's some of the biggest strength in the movie. And you can almost probably read the room on how I've been talking about it up until now is that the cameos are cute, but a lot of the bits are like, yeah, so, it's fine. It's chuckle-worthy in a lot of cases, but they're not super hilarious. But the convention, I think, is a combination of rapid fire, which is huge. And then so many of the cameos and so many probably some of the stronger scenes really hold place into there that it's pretty great stuff. And so I'll, as I kind of now wrap move into my likes and dislikes, I'm just going to hit some main bullet points. The convention stuff was pretty on point. Like I dug it. So that hits on most of the beats of the movie. Oh, geez, I skipped one. Probably my second favorite of the movie, which again, trailer based, is the appearance early in the movie of Jason Lee. Playing his Brody character from Mallrats, and that scene is awesome. It's really just the entire concept of the movie and the dissection of reboot culture, reboot movies. There's no better character than Brody, and Brody's an amazing character to really sarcastically not only tackle the reboot culture, but attack it to give the premise just as he did in Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back. And then also get in some kind of fun defending of the MCU at the same time, which is, that's the way that scene should be. It was great. So, all right, so now you get a feel for the flow, a bit of a feel for the cameos. I haven't really gone too deep into the weeds on the convention side, and I'll probably keep it intentional that way. Let's just go through some brain droppings. Here's just random thoughts, random observations, likes, dislikes, whichever. Okay. There is a zillion little things for the obsessive nerds and all of us. Obviously, I'm one of them. I know you are, whoever you are. I know you are as well. And what I mean by that is, are you the type of person that you see a movie that you really like or a movie that is has a lot of references, and you're like super proud because you caught a bunch, but then you're like, I know I missed a bunch. So then you go out and you watch those things you might have missed, videos on YouTube or the list you might find on websites or on the web. This movie is chock-a-block full of them. I'm talking everything from the opening scene at the Quick Stop and the RST video, where the RST video is covered up with the front organization for Kevin and Jay's weed business, to the fact that the RST is closed, but next to it is a red box, which is a big deal. When Kevin started making this movie, he reached out to them. There was a reference earlier in the movie of some number, and the first two digits of it were 37, so that's straight up Clerks callback. Callbacks in terms of personal callbacks. At the opening scene of Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back, his then super young daughter, she was just like a baby, made a cameo. In this movie, the grown-up Harley Quinn is pretty much one of the co-stars, and then Jay's real-life daughter is in it as well, I'm not going to say whose kid, but is somebody's kid. Kevin's mom has a little cameo, and she's seated in the crowd at the Comic-Con. There's a scene where the girl gang has blueprints, which is just straight out of like the blueprint scene from Mallrats. So it's really above and beyond just all the obvious cameos. There's lots of little nods to the movies, and that's always a fun thing to kind of Easter egg hunt for. Like I said, a lot of the jokes it's a stoner comedy. It's a Kevin Smith stoner comedy. So there's a lot of jokes, a lot of dick jokes, a lot of stoner jokes. And a lot of them are just kind of like, oh, yeah, sensible chuckle, funny. But there's every so often you'll get hit with a pretty good one or a really solid callback. I think I definitely say stay through the credits. The post-credit joke might have been one of the biggest laughs. So there's certainly it there, and it's certainly stuff that's warranted by seeing it with a crowd. I think it'll heighten that experience. Oh, I can't believe I missed this. So as they kind of established Millie, Millennium Falcon's group of friends, one of her main friends is deaf. And I read somewhere, they're like, oh, how easy do you have to make it that they're trying to around a lot of the meta jokes and around a lot of the reboot jokes, where they even say like a reboot is just you do the same movie over, but you try to bring in diversity, try to bring this. They're like, so her group of friends is, of course, a diverse group, but her friend being deaf is straight up analogous to the fact that Bob doesn't really talk. So you get Jay and Bob doesn't talk, and her friend is deaf. I was like, oh, duh. So even there, he's trying to kind of do some parallels, which I missed. So bad on me, but yeah, it's a fun bit. Smith is pretty hammy. His Bob has always been pretty hammy. I mean, he has to emote through faces, and so he's really gotten into that kind of like uber smile face, but he's a little hammier than usual. That being said, he also plays himself in a dual role as the movie proceeds, and there he has a little bit of fun with that. And again, crazy meta-ness as he's addressing Comic-Con crowds, just as he more or less does in real life. It's definitely a crossover from movie life to real life in a weird way. That's cool. The weed humor is on point, by all means. There's some pretty funny stoner humor. There's a lot of funny stoner humor in here, so if that's your bag, you'll pick up on some of that stuff. And again, the evolution of where we are now from where we began is an interesting one. And I think I touched on it already earlier, where I talked about how the RST video is crossed out and you have the red box there, which is really, we're almost past that. But there are a handful of us, myself included, that just thrived on video stores during video store culture and really do appreciate that red box keeps us kind of connected to that world, even though hands down, you know, streaming is, it's not the future, it's the present. And streaming services are really what kind of own. I think it was a cool evolutionary observation. Another one is that the set piece at the mall with Brody, where he kind of talks about how he moved his comic shop into the mall because it was cheap, but that even the mall is kind of closing and that mall culture is being replaced by online culture, is really another observation that since where we began with the Viewskew movies and where we are now, things are certainly changing, and he's kind of rolling with the punches there, or at least rolling with the references. So it's pretty good. And then there's like even Silent Bob emotes through emojis. That's his big bit where he, like, if he wants to convey something, he'll comically slap at a phone for minutes to give you a simple emoji. It's a dumb bit that's played out a lot through the movie, but it's not inappropriate. I mean, it's kind of one of the ways we communicate these days. So yeah, I think that's some cool stuff. By far, favorite scenes for me is the one I've talked about a bunch, which is the Brody scene. And then one I haven't, which is pretty well established that it was one of the last things they made for the movie was the scene where we get a revisit with some Chasing Amy characters. And it really would be, it's the one point in this whole cast that I don't want to do a disservice to dissect or give too much away, because it was probably the thing I was most excited to see, because it was a output of Kevin reestablishing his real life relationship with Ben Affleck. And for those of you who know, obviously the backstory there is long and sort of sorted, but at some point, I mean, Kevin really started Ben Affleck's career. I mean, Ben started very young in a lot of his movies. Ben, just recently, Kevin and Jay got to do their feet in the sidewalk at Grauman's Theater, and Ben gave them an amazing intro and talked about really how it was a springboard to get him into Good Will Hunting. One of his biggest regrets was he didn't thank Kevin at the Oscars for that. So this movie brought them back together after separating years ago, when I guess Kevin said some, you know, shit he probably shouldn't have, and then Ben had some challenges with that, and I believe rumor has it his wife did as well. So, but this got them back together, and it got them back together so late in the game that Kevin kind of had to figure it out, film a scene, and then put it in the movie. And where that shows up is early on in the comic convention. Dudes, it's the best scene in the movie. It's really, really well written. It's sincere. It is a bit ham-fisted, and this is really, we kind of, the movie tips, slowly tips before there to, from just stoner comedy, dick jokes, to some relatively serious looks at fatherdom, parentdom, kids, and kind of how they play a role in our lives and when. And I'm not going to pretend that it's anything so super deep, but it's a surprise, and it was a nice surprise. And this scene really kind of started that and nailed it, in my mind, tenfold. It was by far the best reference to a previous movie and kind of one of the funnest. Oh, that's a neat payoff. Because a lot of other ones are just cameos for cameos' sake. This one was like, fuck, that it's really cool to see where that went. So if for nothing more, at some point, check this movie out to see where things went with that. Because I know a lot of us are really big fans of Chasing Amy, and that's a fun point to check back on. And above and beyond Ben, of course, is Joey Lawrence was back as well, and she's awesome. So it was great. It was really, really good. But on that point, cameos in general, I think some of the cameos I wish we had more time with. Obviously, that's just being a fan. A lot of them are just kind of thrown in there whip smart, especially in the convention. There are scenes where they're just running through rooms and you get like a blink and you miss it moment. And things like the comic book guys or some of the Clerks cast. Still funny. Still great to see them, but yeah, we could have hung out a little bit more. And then some more obscure ones, like the PA guy from Jay and Bob Strike Back. Plays a pretty strong role, so I was pleased to see him back. It was cool to do it. I already mentioned the surprise there was no Elias, and then another one, which, gosh, I feel bad about forgetting, but I saw another review where somebody mentioned this. Really sad to see no Mosier. And so Scott Mosier is Kevin's original partner in crime and de facto producer for most of the Askew Universe movies. At some point, and I don't remember when it was it Jersey Girl? Somewhere, no, it was after that. They kind of parted ways, and Mosier went on to Hollywood to do some producing, directing. He directed the recent Grinch adaptation. They're still tight. They're still buds. They still podcast, and podcasting is really such a big part of Kevin's life. And for what we fans, we kind of coexist with him through a lot of that. But it was surprising and kind of bumming that there wasn't at least a shot of him in there, because he's so big in the early movies. So, but maybe there was. Maybe I missed it. Shout out if there was. Kind of as we're coming to an end of this long, I'm going to talk as long as the movie. So I think what really elevates my review from like, it's okay, it's a fine rental, to like, oh, you should see it, is the stuff I mentioned with Harley Quinn as the daughter, as Jay's daughter. I went into the movie really skeptical of that, and frankly feeling it just sounded like a tacked on subplot. I mean, the idea of adding a kid to any sequel always seems like just grasping at straws. And it is, in some ways. Not a lot of the stuff with her and her friends was just like everything in the movie. Like, oh, yeah, that's fine. It's sort of funny. But within that, there are moments, and they're not many, but there's a few really emotional and sincere moments. And fucking both Harley Quinn and Jason Mewes both sold them really well. They weren't hammy. They weren't overreaching. But they were honest. They were tear-inducing by themselves, and admittedly, I welled up at one or two points because, like, holy shit, I did not expect this. And that includes kind of one of the final shots in the movie. And again, I'm not going to give the details, but I'm going to say that that's where I think that, you know, people talk about, like, does a movie stick a landing? And in this case, I don't know if this movie never necessarily sticks the beginning or middle per se, but I do think it sticks the landing. I do think it sticks the ending. I think the third act between the convention and then really some of this emotional stuff was like, wow, that was pretty fucking cool. And so absolutely one of the kind of the final scenes where after all the dust settles and we really get back to where we need to get back to is at some point just at the quick stop. It's, yeah, it's legit cool. Like, it's a legit cool moment. And I think that's, I think Kevin should, and he should get a lot of credit for that, because it's, I think it's him breaching out. And it's also for a movie that is like, you know, 20 layers deep of meta references and meta-ness in general. One of the reasons Kevin made this movie from the beginning, and it's something he said, and now I guess I get it, is that if you take real life Jason Mewes, who, again, most of us know the history of him, who's had a really rocky history and had an often losing battle with substance abuse and now is many, many years clean, which is surprising and amazing, but also is now as a relatively new father. His daughter's like four. Kevin saw how this guy, who was a bit of a flake, ended up becoming a father, and he says, and he touts, he always touts, I mean, I can't speak to it, that Jay's a really good father in real life. And so that was one of the things that kind of drove this storyline within here. And I think that's just another crazy meta-ness where in the movie, the character in the movie ends up finding out he's a father, but in real life, the inspiration is that character, and then the real life daughter of the director plays her. So that's, I hold that all in pretty high regard. So, final thoughts. It's a bunch of set pieces. There's a bunch of cameos. It's a walk down memory lane. It's a pastiche of dick jokes. Throw them at the wall, see what sticks. There's no plot. There's the surprise kid story. But amidst of a lot of kind of moments, we get a few rewarding peek-ins of characters we dig. We get some bittersweet moments, a little growth in heart. And then, you know, for those of us kind of fell in love with a lot of these characters and this environment back 20 some odd years ago, it's a check-in. It's a check-in with old friends, and that's not a bad thing. So if you're a fan, if you dig this universe, check it out. It's worth it. Check some of those expectations at the door. It isn't a high point, but it is a fun check-in with buds. All right, snooch to the Nooch podcast fans. That's where I'm going to wrap it up. And thanks again, all of you, for listening to the Asteroid Factory podcast. I know that I did this one solo, but I think I'm pretty confident I can speak for Chewie and Doom, and that we absolutely appreciate you guys. We love the fact that the podcast is expanding. We know there's a lot of you out there just like us who enjoy both riffing, dissecting, talking, digging into what we dig on, music, movies, pop culture, video games. So this is a great opportunity to kind of share that with you. So thanks. Until we meet next time, probably should put your ankles into it. Bye.